As many of you know, in a previous church, I gave oversight to a ministry called Celebrate Recovery. CR is a Christian program designed to help people break free from the things that bind us up, to break free from destructive hurts and habits and hang-ups. Many of the people in our group struggled with addiction to alcohol or drug abuse. But that ministry helped set a lot of people free from all kinds of things like anger, uncontrolled eating, and other issues. In a CR group, you always introduce yourself by giving your name and by identifying the issue where you are beginning to experience freedom, the issue where you are beginning to experience recovery. And this morning, because of the topic at hand, I'm wearing my CR shirt, and I would introduce myself to you this way today. My name is Bruce, and I'm in recovery from selfishness. And I know I'm not alone. I think we're all in recovery from selfishness. Because as sinful human beings, we are inclined toward self-centeredness. That's our default. And as Christians who live in America, the problem is intensified because so many aspects of our culture, our consumerism, our politics, our economics, they condition us to put ourselves first. Our culture conditions us to ask, what's in it for me? As we will see in the Bible this morning, Jesus challenges us to adopt a different perspective. He wants to set you and he wants to set me free from a self-centered lifestyle. And to do so, he gives us a very specific antidote: hospitality. Extending hospitality to other people can break the chains of our selfishness. We need to recognize, though, that being hospitable does not come easily or naturally to most of us. Here in Oregon, we prize our independence. We value our privacy. And this can make us reluctant to show hospitality in the way that Jesus asks. I have to tell you, as I was putting the final touches on the message this week, it was really uncomfortable for me. I was very challenged by what I saw as I looked at the scriptures and tried to see them through fresh eyes in a fresh way. I believe there's something powerful here for all of us to learn this morning. So let's see what we can learn from Jesus about hospitality, breaking the chains of our selfishness. And let's begin in Luke chapter 14, verse 12. Then Jesus said to his host, "When you give a luncheon or dinner, do not invite your friends, your brothers or sisters, your relatives, or your rich neighbors. If you do, they may invite you back, and so you will be repaid." Now, let me set the scene. Jesus is dining in the home of a Pharisee, which means he's receiving the gift of hospitality. Now, at that dinner table, he is the visiting rabbi. He is the distinguished guest, and he's sitting there having dinner with a deeply religious Jew. And that means that he's expected to provide some deep, learned conversation, some stimulating information for the host and for the other guests. Instead, though, Jesus does what he often does, and he takes the opportunity to provide some uncomfortable and even countercultural teaching. If we look at what Jesus says around that table from the beginning of chapter 14, we discover that he challenges their view of the Sabbath. He challenges the way that they jockey with each other for social position. And here in verse 12, he challenges their understanding of hospitality. Now let's think about this. If we invite someone over for a meal, as this Pharisee has done, Most of us have a usual guest list. We tend to invite the kinds of people that Jesus mentions. And those people on our usual guest list tend to be a lot like us. They're people who can repay our hospitality if they choose to do so. And it occurs to me that a whole lot of hospitality is done on an exchange basis. I offer you my hospitality, and then you offer your hospitality back to me. Christian author Lynn Bob describes how that played out in her home. She says, I was raised by a mother with a gift for hospitality. She loved to cook, and she always made people welcome in our home. There was a catch, however, because her mother also was a scorekeeper. And so if Lynn's family was invited over to the Smiths for dinner, her mother would say, we owe the Smiths a dinner. And it wouldn't be long before the Smiths got invited back to their house for a meal. Now, there's absolutely nothing wrong with exchanging hospitality with other people. However, hospitality never is something that we owe. It's a gift we can choose to give. And Jesus wants us to be willing to give it away freely, to give it with no hope or expectation of return. And to do that, he says, there's times when you need to extend hospitality to people who are not on your usual guest list. And if we follow his advice, and if we give in this way, it serves as an antidote to our inherent human selfishness. Now, I try to picture the scene around this dinner table. This prominent Pharisee, Jesus, other dignified, illustrious guests. And I can picture them beginning to get distinctly uncomfortable as they ponder what Jesus has just said. I imagine them thinking these kinds of thoughts. Wait a minute. Invite people who are not on our usual guest list? If we don't invite the kind of people we typically invite, then who should we invite? They're about to get even more uncomfortable as they hear what Jesus says in verses 13 and 14. Jesus continues on and says, but when you give a banquet, invite the poor, the crippled, the lame, the blind, and you will be blessed. Although they cannot repay you, you will be repaid at the resurrection of the righteous. That is a radical statement. Those people sitting with Jesus at that dinner table did not view poor and crippled people simply as different. They viewed them as unworthy. They believed that if you experienced physical hardship of any kind, it was a sign that God was not blessing you. You must have sinned in some way, or maybe your parents sinned. But in some way, you fell out of favor with God. Otherwise, you wouldn't be blind or lame or poor. So a Pharisee never would have one of those people over for dinner. It just wasn't done. It was wrong. It would be unpleasant. It might even damage your social standing. And Jesus, he doesn't care about any of that. If I were to paraphrase what Jesus is saying here, I would put it this way. Your hospitality should not only be unselfish, at times it should even make you uncomfortable. You should share what you have with people that you don't normally expect to share with. Don't be hospitable just to be nice. Be hospitable to meet needs. And I believe Jesus urges his dinner companions to adopt that approach for spiritual reasons and practical reasons. The spiritual reason is that in the kingdom of God, everyone is welcome. The invitation is there for everybody. And so we need to understand that hospitality is not just something practical. It's not just something nice. It has tremendous spiritual implications because it is an opportunity for followers of Jesus to represent the welcome of Jesus to the people that God brings into our lives. And Jesus makes it clear that hospitality has significant spiritual implications because he says the hospitality we practice in this life will be noticed when we graduate to eternity. The practical reason for hospitality is that the food and lodging provided by the inns of that day was substandard. The inns, in most cases, were horrible places. They were dirty. They were full of lice. They were full of rats. They were full of fleas. Prostitutes used them as a base of operation. Thieves hung around to identify vulnerable travelers that they could rob. And the meals and the lodging were expensive. So if you could experience hospitality in a home, it was so much nicer. So much more comfortable, so much more safe, and it was affordable. People of means, people with family and social connections, they were the ones most likely to be invited into a home where they could experience good food, and if necessary, because they were traveling, they could rest in safety. The downtrodden people that Jesus describes, they were neglected and overlooked. They were the most likely people to have to eat and sleep outdoors. They were the most likely to be the homeless of their day. And we live in a very different world, and today we have good restaurants and motels, pleasant places where we can choose to eat and sleep, but we still have socially marginalized people who cannot afford those things. So the words of Jesus are still true, and the people of God still need to stand in the gap. And that's why we as a church support ministries like the Eugene Mission and Love in the Name of Christ. It's a way that together we can extend the hospitality of Christ to people in need. And yet there are times when you and I may need to act on an individual basis. As I ponder these words from Jesus and reflect on them, I confess that they make me extremely uncomfortable. As someone who is in perpetual recovery from selfishness, his words challenge me to step outside my comfort zone and to invite people into my life who normally I would not associate with. How do I do that? How do you do that? Here's an example that inspires me. My sister went to a college here on the West Coast, and one of her classmates was a young man who lived on the East Coast. And he could not afford to get home every year at Thanksgiving for that holiday break. So he stayed on campus. And so every year, for the 4 years that he was in college, he spent Thanksgiving extending hospitality. He would invite a couple of homeless people, and he would take them to dinner with him at a local diner. You see, he extended hospitality, providing them with a warm, hot meal in a warm, safe place. His hospitality also provided them with dignity because he was demonstrating that they were not beneath him. They were worth his time and effort. He was willing to be with them and to be company with them. That young man was sharing what he had with people who never could repay him. He was meeting a need, and he was demonstrating the kind of welcome that Jesus described here. It seems to me that if you and I think about this intentionally and pray about it, that we should be able to figure out some ways to put these principles into practice in our own lives. Now, this can be pretty convicting. But we also need to step back and keep all that Jesus says here in perspective. Because he's not just challenging his host. He's also affirming his host. This Pharisee deserves some thanks. He's opened his home to Jesus. He has invited in an itinerant traveling preacher who never could repay him. This Pharisee has graciously extended hospitality, as Jesus described in verse 12. However, upper crust people in that society were expected to entertain traveling rabbis. And so while this was a gracious act, it was not entirely unselfish. In fact, it would even give him some bragging rights. The next day, he could go into the town square and he might bump into a friend who said, "Hey, Levi, what did you do last night?" And he said, "Oh, I had that very unusual rabbi Jesus over for dinner. We had quite a crowd and quite a conversation." Whatever that Pharisee lost in terms of time and money and effort, he made up in status by fulfilling his social obligation. And therefore, in verses 13 and 14, Jesus challenges his host to express hospitality in a new way, to take his hospitality to a different level by inviting people into his home who cannot repay the favor, and in particular, to welcome into his home people who would be amazed to be invited. To show hospitality to people who are socially marginalized or even spiritually suspect. So it seems to me that Jesus is speaking to this Pharisee on two levels. First, there's the level of affirmation. And then second, there's the level of challenge. And it occurs to me, that's often how God works in your life and in mine. Many times, it's not that we're failing. God just does not want us to settle for less than his best. I think many times Jesus comes to us and what he in effect says is this: what you are doing is fine. I just want you to kick it up a notch. And in the area of hospitality, I think we all can kick it up a notch. And if we choose to do so, we will become far less selfish and far more kingdom-minded. And to help us see the big picture, the author of the book of Hebrews reinforces and expands on the teaching of Jesus. Let's take a look at the book of Hebrews chapter 13, verses 1 to 3. "Keep on loving one another as brothers and sisters. Do not forget to show hospitality to strangers, for by so doing, some people have shown hospitality to angels without knowing it. Continue to remember those in prison as if you were together with them in prison, and those who are mistreated as if you yourselves were suffering." I really love this passage because it gives a well-rounded view of hospitality. And first and foremost, it's important for us to love each other within the community of faith. And we can do that in many ways, but showing hospitality to one another, particularly hospitality over a meal, is a great way to do that. And there's a reciprocal arrangement in that. We express and exchange hospitality with each other, and it's a good thing to do. Because relationships change when we break bread together. The Garden Way Youth Group meets on Sunday nights, and starting this fall, they began to meet 1 hour earlier so that the students and the adults who work with them could share a meal together. Our youth minister, Drew, tells me that that simple act of having dinner together has started to transform relationships within the group. Plus, the food is provided each week by a different church member. This means that we get to demonstrate hospitality to our youth so they can see it in action, they can learn about it, and then experience it with each other. I think that's a win-win. Now, hospitality certainly is not limited to meals. But there's a reason the Bible talks so much about breaking bread together. And it's a great way for us to demonstrate our love for one another as brothers and sisters in the family of God. And yet, hospitality with each other is only the beginning. We need to consider how to show hospitality to people outside the community of faith. And that's why verse 2 reminds us to extend hospitality to complete strangers. It's exactly the kind of thing that Jesus was talking about. And the author of Hebrews puts in this interesting little twist when he says, that stranger just might be an angel in disguise. He's talking about an actual historical event. It's an event that took place in the life of Abraham and Sarah. It's recorded in Genesis chapter 18. They were hanging out by their tent one day, and three strangers show up. And Abraham rolls out the red carpet of hospitality. He kills one of his prized animals. He serves them the best food and drink. He encourages them to have a rest and to shelter with him. And those men turn out to be angels, messengers from God with a message for them. And the message is that something miraculous is about to take place. Sarah, who is beyond childbearing age, is about to have a son. And I find myself wondering if Abraham would have been selfish and refused to extend hospitality, would he and Sarah have missed a heavenly message intended just for them? Many people wonder if angels still appear today, and I believe that they do. Sometime I'll tell you some stories about some real-life experiences. The author of Hebrews wants us to take this to heart so that we begin to look at the people around us differently. The people that God brings into our lives, people who are like us and people who are very different from us, they're all men and women made in the image of God, and we need to see them that way and treat them that way. But we also need to deal with people with a sense of anticipation, because who knows, it just might be on some occasion that stranger that we interact with might be a messenger from God sent to us by God to mold us, to shape us, to deepen our faith. When we learn to lovingly, willingly, freely extend hospitality to strangers, it will be a blessing to them and it will transform us. But our text tells us there's more steps that we can take. In fact, if we really want to become free from selfishness, then we need to consider extending hospitality in some very unusual ways, as described in verse 3, by taking care of people in prison and people who are mistreated. Now, the text says to remember those people, but I don't believe he's saying just to think about them and pray for them. He says to remember those in prison as if you were together with them in prison. I think he's telling us that there's times when we need to go visit people who are behind bars. If you ever choose to do that, it will be a transforming experience. I've done it on several occasions. I've sat in a prison waiting room with the person I came to see on the other side of that thick glass, talking to them via a phone. I've gone into prison waiting rooms where you're sitting there along with inmates and other people who have come to visit them. It feels like foreign turf. And a couple of times I've even gone behind bars where I've been in the cell blocks and I've been in the yard with the prisoners. I've sat down in the dining hall having breakfast and lunch and dinner with men that I never met before. And it is a very weird feeling to look up from that conversation and look around the room and see a sea of blue prison garb and you're the only civilian in the room. It's awkward. It's uncomfortable. It takes a little while to get used to that environment. But when I do that, I have to remember the words of Jesus. He said in Matthew 25:36 that visiting someone in prison is just like visiting him. We need to take those words seriously. And I've discovered that when I break through my discomfort and go to visit inmates, it's transforming for them. It reminds them that they are not forgotten. It reminds them that they are not beyond hope. It reminds them that they are not beyond the love of God. If you want to show hospitality without any expectation of ever getting anything back, go visit somebody in a prison. And if you want to try that, I can give you names of some people you can visit. I can put you in touch with ministries that will help you do just that. It's very unusual, but it's powerful. And how about this last category of people we read about, the mistreated? Who's the author of Hebrews talking about here? It's a very broad category. It could include any number of different kinds of people. Perhaps the homeless. Maybe some disabled veterans who aren't getting proper care. Maybe people who are victims of injustice. But the people who are on my heart this morning as I think about this passage are the kids in the foster care system here in Lane County. Those children are in foster care because they've been mistreated and neglected and sometimes abused in their homes. And unfortunately, sometimes in foster care, there's further mistreatment. And it's not the mistreatment of abuse. It's the mistreatment of an overcrowded system that simply can't handle all the kids. And if you're one of 8 children in a foster home that really should be handling no more than 2 or 3, you're not in a good situation. And your needs will be overlooked. You won't be properly cared for. And I'm excited that the Church of Jesus Christ in our community is choosing to step into the gap. And that's why we're working at the DH office next weekend. We want to extend hospitality to the men and women who are on the front lines in serving children and families at risk. And you need to know that this is just the first step. In the months ahead, you're going to be hearing more about how we, individually and as a church, can show hospitality to all of the men and the women and the children who are in and around the foster care system. These are people who desperately need to experience God's hospitality. Hospitality demonstrated in the way that Jesus asks us to offer it. And the wonderful thing is that this is not a duty. Hospitality is a gift. A gift we can choose to give. And a gift we can receive. And hospitality can be transforming. When I was 10 years old, my family was the recipient of a Christ-like act of hospitality that I've never forgotten. It marked me. We were on a family vacation, and we were driving through a remote part of Northern California on a Sunday afternoon. It was just after lunchtime, and our car broke down. My dad had the window down. It was a warm summer day, and he smelled gas, and he knew something was wrong, so he quickly pulled over on the shoulder. And we looked around, and all we could see was empty countryside, except right across the street was the one and only house. So my dad walked over. He was going to ask to borrow the phone and call for help. Well, the homeowner, Mr. Jameson, came out and took a look under the hood, and he quickly diagnosed the problem. He said, "You've got a busted fuel pump." "I'm a mechanic. I can fix it." What are the odds of that? So Mr. Jameson called his boss at home, and the boss said, "Yeah, I'll meet you at the shop. We'll open up the shop so you can get a new fuel pump." My dad hopped into Mr. Jameson's pickup along with him, and they made the 30-minute drive into town to go get the part. I later learned that the boss also had to make a 30-minute drive in to open up the shop so they could get the fuel pump, all on a Sunday afternoon. Meanwhile, Mrs. Jameson invited me and my brother and sister and mom into her house. It was a hot August day, so she made some homemade lemonade and laid out some sandwiches. She said to us kids, go make yourself at home in the yard. Just have fun. And she spent the afternoon keeping my mom company while Mr. Jameson fixed our car with zero help from my dad, who was totally useless as a mechanic. The Jamesons had been to church that Sunday morning, and they usually spent Sunday afternoons relaxing. It was the one time of the week when they had nothing on their plate and they could relax, and that day they gave that time to us. Driving back and forth into town and fixing the car took the entire afternoon. And at the end of the day, my dad tried to pay Mr. Jameson for his help, but he refused. All my dad had to pay for was the price of the fuel pump. My parents were not believers, but they never forgot that act of hospitality. We were strangers in need, and a couple of faithful followers of Jesus Christ welcomed us into their home. They were the hands and feet of Jesus to us that day. And for me, that experience was one of many seeds that God planted in my mind and my heart and life that ultimately led me to the foot of the cross, where I chose to become a follower of Christ. When Christians choose to extend hospitality in the way that Jesus describes here, oh, it changes situations. It changes people. It changed me. And yet, we need to be honest and acknowledge that it's not easy to do this. We resist at times being hospitable. We resist the inconvenience. And our inherent selfishness can cause us to cling tightly to our time and to our money. Our desire for privacy can make us reluctant to open up our homes. And in a season of great uncertainty like this season in which we now live, we can be tempted to hold back, to hunker down, and just say, I just got to protect myself and my stuff. Jesus wants to set us free from our selfishness. He wants us to trust him enough to take a holy risk, the risk of hospitality. He wants us to trust him enough so that we become willing to offer his kind of hospitality to unexpected people in unexpected and even unusual ways. What might that look like in your life?